You wear many hats.
Yes.
So I knew you were Aldershot chairman. So apart from doing that, what other hats are you wearing?
So I run David Lloyd Farnham Pickleball.
Right.
So that's where I started off. Then co-founded Aldershot and Farnham Pickleball Club with Andre. Currently the chair of that. I am an IPTPA director and master teaching professional, which means I do all the level one and level two qualifications with Sam Basford for the whole of the UK. Technically and abroad if we need to go further afield.
That's coaching the coaches or teaching the
coaches. I also do the Pickleball Leaders courses for Pickleball England.
Right.
I've got my coaching business, so advanced pickleball or RW coaching, depending on which bits and bobs I'm doing.
Yeah, right.
And I'm also doing a little bit of consulting on the side with a couple of brands on launching new products. And obviously representing Diadem, the sponsors of the podcast.
And there, so you've got your Diadem shop. So yeah. Before we get on to Diadem, so let's get the chairmanship out of the way. So you founded the club. So you're interim chairman at the moment.
Yep.
I had Martin on talking about running a club.
Yep.
Not easy.
Correct.
And your thoughts on the club, the status of where your club is at the moment, and what can you do to move forward or stay, or where are you as a club now?
As us as a club, we started off as six people.
Right.
Playing outside in COVID. Andre got a lot of us together over in Windlesham, play on the outdoor courts around the COVID regulations.
Okay.
I came along a few weeks in and sort of was about number 14, 15. Instant bond with Andre. Obviously knew him from prior at David Lloyd's playing pickleball.
Right.
And then it's like, well, when we come out of this, let's try and find somewhere. And conveniently, I was chair of governors at the school where we play at. And when they had the new build venue, which had four indoor badminton courts.
Yep.
I automatically went, well, we can get in there.
That's Farnham Heath.
Yeah, Farnham Heath End School.
Oh, okay.
So we started off at one night.
Yeah.
With a few of us that became two nights, that became three nights, that became four nights. Then went back to three nights because no one wants to do Friday night.
No.
Friday night was a very difficult one to fill. And we tried to do coaching. We tried to do various things and it just didn't take off. So we're three nights a week, graded play. Running a club is the best of times and the worst of times.
I'm sure.
You have to share the successes of your teams doing really well or your players having individual success. You have to deal with relegation. You have to deal. We've had a death in our club, not actually within the club, but Derek Moore, that was one of our players that was at Runnymede Royals. He passed away a year or two ago and was a big part of us. So we've actually had one of our own going.
Yeah.
But then we've brought Pickle Babies in as well. So we've had sort
Pickle
of,
Babies. Is that what they're called?
So we've actually had
anybody who's over 18 or under 40.
a literal child was born by one of our players.
Oh, I see. Sorry.
That was actually David Lloyd's rather than AFAC, but we actually have had births and deaths. So you go through a big swings and roundabouts and no one really understands the time it takes.
No.
You see what happens above the surface.
Yeah.
But there's a lot of sort of paddling underneath to keep things afloat and keep it moving along. And you're never, ever going to get it right.
Never going to please everyone.
The best you can.
Yeah.
As much of the time as you can and apologize for when you go wrong, but do the best that you can. Those people.
But I think we have a similar problem at our club. I think if people aren't happy, then they've got a choice. They can either put their hand up and get involved or, you know, go and try and find somewhere else. But I think at the moment, I think everyone is doing their damnedest best to provide a platform for people to play pickleball, which I think is a fantastic sport.
Venues are the problem.
You are the man that I first met.
Yeah.
The first person I played and I came down to me.
The first words in my mouth were, stop spinning the ball, Andy. Because obviously coming from another racket sport, you instantly try to do the things that you do.
Yeah, and I think the right things.
And in coaching, we see a lot of this is it. It's trying to undo what works in other sports and rewire your brain for pickleball.
Yeah.
Because your tennis brain doesn't necessarily work. Your badminton brain doesn't work. Your squash brain doesn't work. All of them can really help you.
But they
can hinder you in an equal amount.
Exactly, because I've dragged my wife into it and she wasn't a racket sports person. And actually people have said, that's great because you're not starting from a place with a bad habit. I can actually help you in certain ways. But I mean, Thaddeus, he was like, I wasn't aware, one of the best coaching sessions, apart from yours, of course, with Thaddeus was that she said at their level, they don't spin a lot. There's hardly any spinning. And she said, actually, it's more about being consistent and patient. And I think that's one of the things I've learned over the last 8 or 12 months is patience.
I mean, what I say about the spin thing is that it gets you so far.
Yeah.
Then it gets you into trouble because you don't develop your skill set.
Yeah.
And actually, you're learning to win badly.
Yeah.
So actually, what if you look at the coach education course, there is no mention of spin anywhere in the level one or level two from the IPTPA or what we're going to be launching from Pickwell England. It will come in at a point and there are places for it.
Of course.
But at the highest level, it doesn't really have a huge amount of impact on a good quality player. So all you're doing is adding risk unnecessarily to your own stroke when you just need to get it in the right location. And if you can counteract that, you give them nothing to work with.
How would you describe pickleball to somebody who's never played it? Because this is happening a lot, going, pickleball, what is pickleball? Okay. What would your definition be?
Really,
I'm trying
easy.
To
okay, so
connect with people with
visualize
it.
Visualize playing table tennis.
Yep.
But you're standing on a table.
Yep.
And the table's the size of a badminton court.
Okay.
Or you can, sometimes I say it's table tennis at the front, tennis at the back.
Okay.
Those are the two things I kind of use as an analogy to kind of understand that essentially you're playing a ball that reacts most similarly to a table tennis ball because it's plastic. It's relatively fast. Obviously, it slows down because of the perforations inside it.
Yeah.
But the court space is a badminton court.
Yeah.
But it has that element of table tennis-y hand speeding at the non-volley zone line. And there's more of a tennis-style ground stroke at the back. But big table tennis is not a bad one if you want to use three words. Big table tennis.
See, I tend to say to mini tennis to a lot of people, but, you know, small, big table tennis is
and
good.
An interesting fact
that
if you look at the size of a non-volley zone
and
you lean in the right way, that's pretty much the same depth as a table tennis table. And the height of a pickleball net above the ground is pretty much the same as a table tennis net above the ground.
Oh, really?
If you consider the actual dimensions.
Okay, I did. That's
nugget from Colin Johns, but I'd actually worked out most of that myself, actually. I went, it looks about the same. So I played a little bit of table tennis as a kid.
Yeah, yeah. We've got a couple of table tennis players at the club, I think. And yeah, you can see, it's really interesting when you get a new player coming in and you're trying to work out where they've come from and you can tell. You know, the badminton players, don't lob them, you know. You can see they're great at there and the table tennis and all in the hands.
There'll be a slice coming from a badminton, from a squash player at some point.
Yeah. And then the tennis people like to be bangers, I think, to start with.
Yeah, they start at the baseline.
Yeah.
And then they just need to find the person that teaches them that that's not the way to play.
It's hard to change those habits, though, I think, for some people.
They need to feel it.
Yeah.
So I always refer to finding Andre.
Right.
So when I was playing initially, more my players at Dave Lloyd's Farnham, the ones that were there before me, laugh about how I used to play because I was the classical, someone comes from tennis, spanking the ball hard until Andre came to a session and then just blocked me to death. And I had no kind of way to get around that. And now there's a lot of finding Lauren. So Lauren Vandal that plays for us, he goes to a few clubs and they learn that you can't do that against him. I've done a lot of that when I go to do coaching clinics or I go and it's like, speed up the ball as fast as you can. Let me get your fastest hitter. And I'll just drop it in the non-volley zone about 2 foot over the net.
Yeah.
And they're like, well, what are you going to do after that now then?
Yeah. You're taking all the pace away from their game.
Oh. And suddenly they understand that there's more to it than power, that once you find someone that can handle your power, you have nowhere else to go. Good pickleball players are fully rounded.
Okay.
Yeah. And do a bit of everything. Play what your opponent dislikes, not what you necessarily prefer.
And you've got to be patient. And what I think is wonderful about pickleball as well, it's a game when you're in the moment as well. Nothing on the outside gets involved. You no matter what sort of day you've had, you come in and you're in the zone. You have to be. Otherwise, you know, and it's a bit like chess as well. I think it's great for your mental spirit.
I was asked yesterday, how many shots do I think ahead when I play?
And
sometimes nine. Sometimes
nine.
But she said, but how do you know what you're going to do? I said, well, I know that if I put something in a specific location, more than likely you'll put it there, which falls into my trap. I then need to put another trap on you. And more often than not, within 5 to 9 shots, it's where I know it's going to probably go. But you have to understand the patterns that you play and start to see that. A lot of that is playing, a lot of that is watching. Actually seeing how other people play and watching the pros play. And recognizing the patterns that they use.
So you can see their patterns, so you sort of got your own pattern to work against their pattern.
Yeah, I mean, most people don't have patterns at the level that we play at.
No.
Most people kind of play instinctually, but I kind of know I have favoured patterns where I want to go and how I want to push the ball around in certain locations, knowing that more often than not, I'll get something where I want it if I get it right and they play to what I think they're going to do.
And do you ever play against people and actually just play different types of shots to just see where they maybe their strengths and weaknesses? Because we don't often warm up against them. You don't see what their ability is. You might on the circuit.
But obviously, on my blog, I put lots of stuff out. There's a blog sitting on my platform to go live about smart strategy.
Right.
And basically, smart's an acronym on how I probe and feel out an opposition I don't know.
Right.
So there's a process that I follow around working out the strokes, the movement, the acceleration of the ball, the revolutions on the ball, and teamwork.
Right.
That's how the SMART acronym works. And you work through those phases, and initially you're playing relatively neutral, sensible, safe balls.
Yeah.
Like Thaddeus mentioned about not using spin and probing where are your opponent's potential slight weaknesses. Then you start to hit the ball harder. Then you start to put more spin on it. Then you start to test their teamwork.
Oh, excellent. So where did it all start for you then? What's your background?
So, I was born 1973. No, let's go back into
73. Blimey. Yeah,
I was a very happy 50-year-old when I turned into the over 50s. Then they made it 45 plus this year. So I've gone back to being middle of the box rather than old in the box. So as a kid, I played a bit of tennis.
Right.
Played serve volley on clay for about a year, which was brutal and cruel. But actually, if you look back now, all the serve volleying skills and that net skills in doubles has served me well for pickleball coming back in. Put the paddle down. I should put the racket down. That's how pickleball I am.
Yeah.
I put the racket down, played cricket alongside that. The club night where I played, I couldn't play both. They were both Monday night.
Right.
So I chose cricket. Played that all through my teens. Uni, didn't really play. Didn't really do anything until I moved back down to Farnham. So I originally come from Hertfordshire. So born in Essex. Shout out to Molly, the fellow Essex girl that's... Need to get on the podcast at some point.
Femme
Pickleball.
Femme Pickleball.
So yeah, so basically I literally went over the border and then came back over the border into Hertfordshire to grow up and moved here and then started playing cricket and played that for a few years of relatively solid club level, not particularly anything gangbusters. Kids, when it got to 2012, my pickleball legacy is basically from the Olympics. So the London Olympics 2012, went on holiday, picked up a racket for the first time. So we went on holiday where there was a tennis court.
Right.
And when we came back from the tennis court, we went to Wimbledon. It was the only tickets we got for the Olympics.
Right.
And my son's like, oh, I want to play tennis like Andy Murray.
Okay.
And I was self-employed at the time, been doing it a couple of years, and went, okay, let's go down the park. And started playing the ball. And then I did more and more and more and got back into tennis. And that all kind of went along for probably 7 years.
Yeah.
And then my daughter gave up figure skating. She was a competitive skater. We got sick of getting up at 4:30 a.m. in the morning to go to a freezing cold ice rink. And just the money was scary you spend on that. And when that all stopped and she decided to give up, we joined the local David Lloyds. And in there was pickleball.
Okay. So
Jill Bushell, who runs the pickleball at the Bourne Club in Farnham,
right,
was the person that set up pickleball.
At David Lloyd.
I think she was running before her, but she's the person that I met.
Right.
When I first was there. So October 2019.
And had you known of anything of the sport before
that? I was aware of it. It's been said that when I do things, I don't tend to do them by halves.
Yeah.
So that when I was playing tennis, I got the racket and the shoes and the clothes and the bag and would read the American racket sports magazines, which would mention this weird thing called pickleball. So when I saw it on the door of the sports, I thought, I'll have a go at that.
Yeah.
Come and have a go.
Yeah, why
and
not?
Jill mentioned the first time I was hooked. She said she saw it on my face. There was like something connected in my brain that this was for me.
Yeah. I think that's the thing. That's why I think I've connected with it. Because I played squash at school and a bit messing around with tennis and always a bit of table tennis with the kids or bat and ball on the beach with the kids. But I think sort of pickleball sort of takes all of those things together. And I think that's probably why you get sort of hooked on
it. Well, I put it on an article and I said that it connects you to your childhood. So when I was interviewed for one of the magazine articles that I featured in, I basically said that it's like when you're with your grandparents on the beach and you're a little kid playing with that plastic bat and that plastic ball.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's that same noise, that same feeling.
Yeah.
I can connect that and I get a little bit emotional with my granddad that's not with me anymore.
Yeah, yeah.
And I can kind of connect those times I had with him playing cricket in the garden, bat and ball in the garden, to the kind of what this does for me
on an
emotional level.
Oh, that's wonderful. That is really wonderful. And that's what... We need to get some of these youngsters involved now. And this is Red Nose Day Friday, which we held down at with the Fleet Aces.
Heart Leisure Centre.
And we're up to over 1,800 quid, which is wonderful.
Excellent evening. It was really impressive.
It was just a lovely day. And you talk about the emotion about that. For me, I came home and I was just like buzzing. It was everything. It was, we did a bit of coaching, and there was a couple that turned up, which is sums up the day for me. And Rachel, our secretary, and I went over to court with these two individuals, and I'm sure they're in their 80s. And I said, we played before? No, but we used to play tennis in our day, and they could shuffle around. And we started doing a little bit of dinking, and we just had a little competition. So I said to the lady, and Rachel was playing with her husband, and we're doing 1-2. I said, let's get to 10, and we got to 15, and then suddenly a ball raised, and she went whack. And I said, you still got that competitive edge in you?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
It never goes.
Never goes. And it was lovely to see, because, and they went away like, thank you. They only needed 10 minutes. But you could see that thinking, oh, this is something even we could still do now.
Yeah.
And that's the thing. I think the great thing about sport, it's probably like a bit like golf as well, is a sport that doesn't age.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, I've set myself a target, even if I can make it to 100, that I might win something in the Nationals or the Open, my category if I'm 100.
Well, but I think there's over 85s in America.
Is there really?
Pretty sure I've seen stuff online of over 85s, and it's like, if anybody wants to be critical of that, they're still going and competing at 85.
Ah, that's wonderful.
And it's just being out there doing that says something.
Well, Martin said he was at Cambridge, tournament the other week at Cambridge, and there was on the court, the difference in age was like 67, I think, between the oldest and the youngest.
Yeah.
And he said it was wonderful to see. And that's what you've got, Lauren, and we got Nia in our club. And these are the guys I'm just thinking, you know, how can we get more of these youngsters involved? I mean, my sons came down on Friday, and my youngest one, he really enjoyed himself, and I think he could see himself doing it a bit more. But that's where I'm looking at. I see this, all of this is about being a community pickleball and trying to grow the sport, because I just see there's so many advantages for everyone.
Well, I mean, my son plays. I mean, he was...
How old is your son?
He is now 20 nearly.
Right.
So he's been playing, but he plays tennis.
Okay.
And for him, tennis is cool, and tennis was his love.
But hang on, is the word cool, is this the problem, do you think?
There's a slight element that there's a thing that it hasn't quite got that edge yet.
You think it's the name?
Doesn't help in some circumstances, but then there's lots of sports have got weird names, so does it really matter? But pickle can be a little bit tricky for people.
But I think I was thinking to talking to Thaddy about this, and she said that's what's great. It's got its own name.
It's different.
It's different. And
you go, oh, what's that?
Exactly.
Yeah, so he plays a bit, but his love will be tennis, so that's tricky. I think the problem we have is the growth was in the older age groups historically.
Yeah.
I know whilst that's coming down, until we get access to facilities to allow everybody to play, there's going to be an element, oh, do I want to be around them? I mean, we've got possibly 3 people under 30 about to trial with us fairly shortly. I'm just trying to find a night to get them in. And there it's like, I know the kids, when they play tennis, they're keen to have a go. You know they're going to be pretty good. Where's the space to squeeze them in? Almost going to have to positively discriminate to bring younger people in to try and level out the ages in your club. But if venues come, then that will help. I mean, London Pickleball's got a good job. I mean, their 18 was very young yesterday.
Yeah.
And they've been able to attract a wider age demographic. But again, the club's...
You think that's their location, though, as well? I mean, being close to London.
London clubs definitely have that pull in from there. And I think there isn't quite the reach. If you're going to go to a London Pickleball, you probably Googled London Pickleball or North London Pickleball. You're not really going to Google Fleet Pickleball or Farnham Pickleball unless you're kind of in that. You're just not pulling from the same base.
Do you ever see a time around here, though, where there's a central location, you know, like a clubhouse where you can turn up and it's a social place. You can go, there's pickleball available all day long, a bit like a tennis club, but maybe
inside a year.
You think, I'm hearing things in the grapevine that something's going on, and because there is
Telford's there and looking to expand. And that's proved that can work on a model of only 3 courts. But
is that all they've got?
Yeah, it's got 3.
Okay, because I was thinking it's foot traffic. Obviously, as a business model, because I think Thaddy was telling me that in America there's this chicken thing.
Chicken and pickle.
Chicken and pickle, isn't it? Where it's not, it's a social club, but it's around pickleball.
It's based on Chuck E. Cheese's, the kind of brainchild, which was essentially arcade games back in the day and like a restaurant. Chicken and pickle is based around a really good quality chicken restaurant.
Yeah.
And pickleball around it. So it's kind of people will go for the chicken or the pickle or the chicken and the pickle. And a lot of the venues in America, so like the Flying Pickle that Susanna Barr owns, that's one of my friends, she's got a really beautiful center in Idaho.
Yeah.
And you look and it's like the dream. And their restaurant is called The Kitchen. And they've got a bar area and you can co-work there, and you've got physiotherapists working out there. You've got other businesses that are aligned to pickleball in there as one big space. But the property prices are so cheap in America. You can buy these gigantic venues. And also there's proof that it works because the model is already in existence and works. Lifetime Fitness are converting tennis courts to pickleball courts.
It would be lovely to see, because I just think it's one of those things where you could just, like, you know, Saturday morning you pop down and you can watch sport, maybe in the bar, you can go and play a bit of pickleball.
It'll also solve a lot of the club problems, because club problems are, one, access to venues, two, levelling of players.
Yes.
If you have a 20-court venue and those four courts are for your 4-5s and 5-0s, those four courts are for your 3-5s to 4s, and you can then say, well, you go and play on those courts. Doesn't matter where you come from. If you're that level, that's where you go. And then suddenly all the, am I in the right level? Where do I go into a session? Because most of our clubs are hiring a sports hall for 2 or 3 hours. Resource time is limited. Court time is limited. There's always that break point that gets a bit crunchy.
Yeah.
But if you just go, well, you're the 5-0s, go and play with the 5-0s.
Well, I saw Andre Agassi, I believe him and his entourage or cronies have bought Dupre.
Yep.
And he was saying what he loves about the sport and Dupre was the fact that if you've got a rating, wherever you go, you find someone with that similar level and you know you're going to get a good game of pickleball, which is great. I've got slight issues with Dupre still at the moment. Is it how you're getting it? Because we've got them through our club playing amongst ourselves, but how accurate that
is. Are you referring to the 12-fingered children that come out from Fleet Aces with their Dupre ratings, because it's a little bit inside rather than outside validated?
Possibly.
That is just any rating system when it's new.
Yeah.
And once we get 3 or 4 years in and there's enough cross-pollinization of people going beyond your club to another event,
yeah,
the more opens you play, the more nationals you play, the better it will be. But some of the challenges are with the tournaments. It's a lot of work to enter results.
Yeah.
So, and I know that for Pickleball England, they upload them centrally to Dupre on a massive spreadsheet.
Yeah.
And still it sometimes gets wrong. Yeah. I've got missing matches. I've had wrong things done in the wrong order that seem to break your Dupre stuff, this and the other. And that's at a huge scale. On a small scale, if you're running an 8-court, 12-court tournament, something like Steve Beale will do and Simon Farr, or something Lou and Sam will do, the additional workload to upload that data, pretty hefty.
Yeah.
And if you do your own, no one's going to validate it.
No.
The number of internal
solution then, do you think? Is there a solution, or is it just a matter of time? And
I think it's a matter of time. The more formal big things that get run, mass participation events like the English Open, where you've got 1,100 people last year, nearly, probably going to push 1,500 or 2,000 this year. That's going to put hundreds of thousands of matches into Dupre.
Yeah.
And that will bring the accuracy of the algorithm up. And then we need more of those regional things that have got a little bit more ability to make money and to deliver that. Because the tournaments are great that are around here.
Oh,
the guys
gosh.
That run these work bloody hard.
I know.
But not a lot of money from the sounds of it. I can't tell, but they're not charging gigantic entry fees compared to what they play in America. And they're on their feet all day for a couple of days to do that. Then you're asking them to input 200 scores manually because there's not really a system to do that. I think you can go with Dupre and get them to do your event payment for you. Then that might give you some ability to access the club system to inject the results, but it's still a lot of manual data entry. It's just another complication to consider when you're running an event, when it's difficult enough when you're doing a festival or...
But yeah, I was at one yesterday with Steve and Simon were at, and it was all handwritten on spreadsheets and stuff like that. And you feel, even then it was like trying to work through. I said, you need a laptop, Steve. And he... Stop it. You know, it's like there. So I was going to ask you about how pickleball is run in this country. We sort of talked off record the other day, and I asked Daddy the same question and Martin. This conversation, that there was an article in the Telegraph, Chowdhury was part of, and they were saying about, you know, who, because pickleball is not actually recognised by Sport England yet, is it?
Or it's gone through pre-approval.
But, you know, I don't know what you have to do to become a sport, but anyway, you know, is darts a sport? You change your shoes.
As I understand it, the situation is that the first step for any approval from Sport England is to be seen as a distinct discipline.
Right.
So pickleball is a distinct discipline from beach tennis, padel, tennis, squash, badminton, any other racket sports. It has to pass that pre-approval to then be considered by the Board of Sport England to whether it gets national governing body status. Right. That, to my knowledge, was approved. So yeah. It's a separate sport. And then obviously there's the conversation around the LTA.
Who should be running pickleball?
Yes. Which
and do you have a view?
So
and I know it can be controversial. This is not a trick question, but
mine. So if we think about when you said about my, so I'm working for Pickle England, delivering pickle leaders courses.
Yeah,
I commentate on their events.
Yep,
I do their coach education for them at the moment, and I've just literally yesterday, and we're about to do the final proofreading this afternoon, completed their level one coaching qualifications for England,
yeah,
with level two and three to come. So my likelihood of being impartial about that decision is pretty
different hats.
Lim.
Yeah.
So it's pretty similar. It's unlike, I mean, what we've got to look at is Karen and the team that have run pickleball for 5 years have done incredible things.
Yeah.
Done unbelievable things. My favorite thing that I said to Karen, I actually said it straight to Karen, it's like people don't realize, right? So if we think about the biggest tennis mass participation event in the UK is
Wimbledon.
Correct. How many courts have they got?
Now, I think it's 107 or something, is it?
How many do they use in the tournament?
20 or 30?
18.
Right.
I believe there's 18 courts.
And they're trying to extend Wimbledon as well, aren't they? Yeah. To get more courts, aren't they?
There's 18 courts.
Yeah.
Over 14 days.
Yeah.
Runs around 10 hours.
Yeah.
What's the average length of a match?
2.5 hours.
Okay. English Open. 4 days.
Yeah.
9 in the morning. 10 at night. We got kicked out while they were about to turn the lights out when I was commentating on one of the finals. That's how late it was running.
Yeah.
40 courts running twice as long.
Yeah.
How long are the matches running? On average.
20 minutes.
15, 20 minutes.
Yeah.
8 times the matches.
Yeah.
On twice as many courts.
Bigger tournament.
Over 4 days.
Yeah.
As a mass participation event for a racket sport.
It's bigger than that.
It's pretty much bigger than anything.
Yeah.
Powered by volunteers.
Yeah.
Doing it for love.
Yeah.
With no backing other than sponsorship.
Yeah.
I think they should have a chance to do it with some backing from some other people.
Yeah, I think
and also to be fair, if people are saying, as I understand it, that Sport England is not going to be giving Pickleball England money, it will allow our clubs to access money.
Mm.
I don't think there's a funding stream that comes online from being the national governing body. It's just recognition that you are legit and that you can then say to your community and your clubs, you can then go to bodies that use Sport England as a funding mechanism.
But then you get that it problem, isn't it? If clubs can access funding, because the clubs are run by volunteers and whatever the club strategy is. So we've had this conversation about, you know, one club's just all about sociability, other clubs maybe about being competitive. And then, you know, is there going to have to be some guidance? You know, what are you asking money for and what it's, who's going to manage all of that? And,
well,
you know, you're going to come under a regional body to say, right.
If you look at tennis, if you look at cricket, all of those kind of things, there's always an application. They don't just bung 20 grand at you. You have to put a business case together. You often have to match fund.
Yeah.
I think it's a case of greasing the wheels to get money to support what you want to try and achieve easier. But arguably, pickleball will grow on the commercial aspect of pickleball. If we look at the padel stuff, if we look at that Telegraph article.
Are we allowed to say paddle here?
It's padel.
Padel.
Yes.
Have you played?
If I played, I would probably end up being divorced because it would be a racket sport that I'd probably get addicted to and then I would never, ever be at home.
So I think there's room for both. I really do believe there's room for both. But paddles or padel seem to frown upon pickleball, and I don't think the other way. I went to a rugby lunch at a rugby club and my mates play padel. And they like, half pickleball. I said, well, why don't we have a padel match and then we have a pickleball match and just see. And because in that same article, sorry, we digress. Like, in that same article, the padel is under the LTA direction. But padel are not happy with how it's been run.
Yeah.
That's what I've heard. And they want out.
And I think what you've got there is that, again, the growth is from commercial entities that are putting up to £60,000 a court into a venue to build a court that needs to recoup their money.
So they're, it's not cheap, is it?
No. Yeah. But you put a paddle court in a venue. I know, for example, the Bourne Club got so many thousand extra members at so many hundreds of pounds a month or a year just by putting a padel court in. So it's got a good payback on it.
Right.
But we have to be careful because of Sweden. Sweden went very, very hard on padel.
Right.
And now you can pick up a padel court for about 9,000 euros.
Okay.
Because they went really fast, scorched the earth, and suddenly there was way more padel courts than there was people to play it. People jumped on the bandwagon, and then all the wheels fell off.
It would be nice in this country if we had anything near that, though, because we don't like, it's not like, even like tennis then. Well, when I was younger, you know, you could go to a field and there were tennis courts you could go in and have a knockabout. And
yeah.
That's less and less now. You can't do that. And I haven't been to America.
To be fair, Tennis for Free is based out of Aldershot. The guy that found it, Patrick, was at my tennis club.
Right.
And that is a free access to tennis courts around the country as a charity. Access for everyone and access for all.
I've never heard of that.
But there's not a lot of it around.
No.
And I look at the park courts at Aldershot. They get refurbished every so often. I actually drive past yesterday and they're doing something there. I've not been there since my pickleball years. But I was there as a regular.
Yeah.
So those things are out there. And that is the thing that padel doesn't really have. I don't think it's easy to get into because it's just constantly used all the time.
Yeah.
And I think pickle is going to get to that space. And padel's been driven by commercial ventures. Pickle will grow on commercial ventures plus the right kind of national governing body to help drive it.
Unfortunately, we don't have the weather here in the UK. So, I mean, outdoor courts in the summer would be lovely, but in America, obviously...
Between 3 to 6 months, depending on what the weather's like in that summer. Or that's probably being optimistic.
Yeah, and...
But indoors will come. Indoors will come.
Yeah, and I'm thinking why... Another thing is why, for schools, you know, pickleball... It's got to be a sport. It's just a fantastic way of getting kids involved in a racket sport.
Are you aware of what I've done at Heath End?
No.
Okay, so when I was chair there, I was started playing pickle and actually Fleet Aces story.
Right.
I was about to go and play a fixture against Fleet Aces that evening, so I had to leave the governing body meeting bang on time to get to the match and pick up Kieran and bring him with me.
Right.
And what happened was in my bag was this pickleball bat, paddle and the ball. And he's like, what's this thing then? And luckily the head's a PE teacher. So I put the paddle in his hand, and the ball, and he's like, he got it straight away. He put it in the deputy head, not a sporty at all, got it straight away. And then they started buying kit. They've had paddles, they've had balls, they've got nets. So every child in that school through their time in that school will play pickleball.
That's wonderful.
They found that the amount of hits per hour, which if you think about any kind of striking sport,
yeah,
it's the success rate of impact of ball on paddle or bat or stick or whatever is how you measure the outcomes of a session. Massively, massively improved over tennis. Tennis is hard to learn to play.
Yeah.
Pickleball you can pick up very quickly.
But that's what I thought, is that pickleball could be a feeder sport for the other sports as well, even like tennis, because it's a start hand-eye coordination. Just doing things like that as a kid.
It's great, but you're feeding into the LTA's tennis linked up strategy. So right. The LTA strategy for pickleball is essentially cradle and grave rather than cradle to grave.
Yeah.
So Pickleball England is, pickleball is for all and for everyone.
Yeah.
Obviously the conversations we've heard and obviously seen from some of the stuff that appeared on social media with YouTube was that it's for the early phases to help people learn to play, then go into what they consider probably the real sport. And then it's where you age out of it. So obviously I like for the fact that pickleball is like it's for everybody. I'm not aging out of tennis.
No.
I aged into pickleball and chose into pickleball. I think Thadia says something similar, that she's very much, it's like her choice to go into this. She's done amazing things for her.
Yeah.
And we don't fit into that narrow box that seems to have been publicly put out there.
And she can continue to play at a high level. Continue with your age anyway as well, because that competition is going to be there. The categories are going to be there. Because I met a gentleman on Friday, Jack, you probably know, Freddie, his son runs pickleball.
Yeah, Jack Ratton.
Yeah, and because there's one of the girls, shout out to Sharon, who's running an after school club, and the school will get kit. And Jack said, look, get in touch, because we are recycling balls into paddles.
Yep.
And donating them to schools to play. So there is stuff out there for people to get started. And
yeah, I played with Sharon on Friday.
Yeah.
And met a couple of her boys. So one of the lads from the school had come along and wanted to meet me and Thaddy because they'd seen us on YouTube and they watch YouTube videos and just spent a little bit of time. And so it was, for me, it was like that ability to give back and see the impact of the sport can have on people.
There's been a follow-up to that, and he had just such a thoroughly lovely time. So there's something going on in the background to give him something. So it was wonderful, that was. Let's go to Diadem, because you told me before that you've got a funny story. So
yes.
So I met Harvey and Christo, who's helped me a lot. And I'd like to thank Christo, and I still probably owe him a bottle of wine or something to get going. He introduced me to Harvey, and I spoke to him about getting supporting us. And this is an informal relationship we have, but obviously you're wearing the Diadem logo.
Yeah.
So what's your story with Diadem?
So I did my level one.
Right.
Did my level two. And then one Friday evening, sitting on the sofa, I had the I wonder if thought, which was, I wonder if someone would give me some kind of sponsorship.
Yeah.
And I started looking around, like, okay, so I was using a Selkirk paddle. Well, I love my Selkirk paddle, but they're never going to sponsor me. Some bloke in England that they don't know about. And I thought, okay, let's start looking around the other brands.
Yeah.
And obviously from tennis, I knew Diadem from their Solstice strings, which was like the thing they were known for. I saw they got into it and I went, oh, join our team. Now I'm filling the form in and see what happens. fired the form in and just said, look, I'm Rob, I'm a level one coach, I'm level two, so I run this club. Be interested to see what we can do.
Yep.
15 minutes later, I got an email back from the Americans saying, we'll put you in touch with Europe. What I didn't realise was that Europe was just setting up, and I then got this email exchange with Christian that runs Diadem Europe. I've never spoken to the man. I've never met the man. I've only ever communicated via email. And I was the original first player in Europe as a partner with Diadem. I was basically Diadem before Framework was.
Oh, right. Okay.
So when Framework wanted to enter the market, Framework came to me. And Christian said, go and see Rob and learn how to play the game and understand about it. So that relationship started from there.
Ah, okay.
So I did a couple of big orders of paddles initially to get people sorted out. And then sort of Framework came along, and it's been a really good relationship since.
Wow. Because there's... And then this is the next thing now, isn't it? There are so many paddles now on the market. It's like, where do you start if you're coming into the game? You know, some of these are quite expensive. I mean, these are just a couple that Diadem have lent me to show off. But, I played up Christo, who's an advocate for Selkirk at the moment. And I was playing with one of them on Friday, and I thought, that's great. And then someone brought another pad on. I said, that's great.
But you've hit the magic bullet already. You've tried something out.
Yeah.
I remember buying my first two or three paddles completely blind and just went, oh, that looks quite nice.
Yeah.
Engage Trident was the first one.
Right.
Then a Selkirk Epic Vanguard, £45 off eBay. Someone didn't know what they were selling and put the wrong price in.
They got bargained.
So yeah, literally 11:30 in the middle of a tennis match, right, I've got to come off and win this bid. No one's bid yet. And going, all right, bang, done that one. And if you can find an advocate or a partner or a sponsor or a coach that's got a deal, then you can try it out. Yeah. They should have a demo bag. There's a lot of us Diadem guys around that almost a lot of the country is covered.
Yeah.
So you can find someone relatively close by and you can just try them out. And it's like a pair of shoes. They don't all fit comfortably for everybody. Not all paddles suit everybody.
No.
There's general rules of thumb. My normal conversation is, what do you think you're lacking or what else would you like to do?
Yeah. That was what Thadia said. She said, like, it's not just the brand. It's what I'm using, I like the feel of it. So that's what I want to use. And I try the shoes and, so they work. So I'll talk to you about another relationship. And that's great.
Yeah.
I mean, I've got these. The Diadem have now produced their own shoes. And obviously,
I'm waiting for mine to arrive. I've got two big feet.
Yeah.
So mine don't fit sample sizes.
Me neither. So I can't. My wife, she loves the color, but they don't do her size. So Harvey, hurry up, please.
I know the order went in.
Yeah, I think April. I think they're coming in April.
They asked for my size, so I'll know what I'm using from there. I mean, this is not a cheap venture for a brand.
No.
You can enter the market on a paddle relatively cheaply because you can get them off the peg from Alibaba and various Chinese manufacturers. You can...
Well, this is what someone already has done in the UK, haven't they, I think? The sort of fox that roams around in the evening.
Yes, I believe that Simon and Darren and Mike that run Fox have access quality manufacturers.
Yeah.
And able to remove the marketing. Because if we think about any product to a degree, a lot of that cost you're paying for is marketing and sponsorship.
Yeah.
If you take both of those away, suddenly your margins completely shift.
Yeah, of course. And then the price has to go up.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, but there, like I say, I would say that all the people I've spoken to, there are spare paddles. I mean, even Chris has got a bag of them. Yep. And I think you, like yourself, you've got them. And
I've got two bags in my boot.
Have you?
And I just seem to acquire paddles. I mean, the person that's worse for it is Sam Basford. Sam Basford seems to just get paddles acquired for, they just appear. And he gets another one for something from someone. He just, again, early mover advantage.
So let's move on.